Adam, tell me a little bit about your background. What is it that you're focusing on in climate change?
My background, personally, I've been involved in the climate change issue since my undergraduate days back in the late 1980s. I was part of the original group that started the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the first assessment report, way back in 1989. I worked for almost 25 years with Environment Canada as a climate researcher, primarily linking the global climate models to be able to use those to look at climate change impacts and adaptation strategies. And over those 23 years, looked at ecology, ecosystems, economic valuation of biodiversity, and issues of sustainability. And I brought all of that together for the last 3 years here at the University of Prince Edward Island, here in the Climate Lab.
And you also have an association with the School of Business.
Yeah, for the last year I've been a faculty member of the School of Business here at the University of Prince Edward Island. I think that's clear recognition that the issue of climate change, even though I've been involved in it for almost 30 years now, is finally mainstreaming. And there are a lot of business trying to deal with the risks from climate change, not just the physical risks, but the regulatory risks, the legal risks, the insurance risks. There's many risks associated with climate change. And businesses are seeing that they're on the leading edge of informing their shareholders if they can talk specifically about the risks from climate change.
We're here on Prince Edward Island. What brought you to Prince Edward Island to do your research?
It's a beautiful, beautiful place, first of all. But most importantly for my career, we're really at the part of the leading edge of the impacts of climate change. So similar to Canada's north, where we're seeing very large shifts in temperature and precipitation, here on the island, things have been getting much warmer and much drier over the last 10 to 15 years. And during that time frame as well, we've had an increase in the rate of coastal erosion, again, over the last 10 to 15 years. And when I came to this island 3 years ago, I didn't have to convince anybody that climate change was occurring. They were all telling me that climate change was occurring and that I should be out there measuring it to tell them how bad the situation actually is.
You talk about erosion, but what about sea level rise? Are the two of them connected?
Yes, they're very connected because coastal erosion is impacted by three main things, I suppose, maybe four main things. Certainly the level of water or the influence of water on the coastline. The higher the sea level, it usually means the more inland impact that the oceans or the seas will have on the island. Prince Edward Island is quite susceptible to coastal erosion for several reasons. One is the sea levels are rising. Two is that it's made of sand and sandstone primarily. So it's a very sensitive island. It's essentially just a sandbar off of North America. And eventually it will disappear under current rates of coastal erosion. It will disappear in 10,000 years. So we're not in any immediate danger of disappearing. However, the rates of erosion can mean that places along PEI can lose a meter, even 2 meters, even 4 meters over one storm during the winter time.
Now you say that when you first got here, the islanders told you, you better get out there and do something about this climate change. So what have you done in terms of your research to answer that challenge from the islanders?
We're doing lots of research. One of the things is really just trying to understand what changes are occurring. And so we've put together all of the climate data that is being recorded here on the island. Ever since around 1994, Environment Canada has removed itself from measuring the climate. There's not as many climate stations out there. That doesn't mean people stop collecting the data, it's just that Environment Canada stopped archiving it and keeping it and making it available to people. So what we're doing is we're going around to provincial agencies, to private homes, to private agencies as well, and putting all of their climate observations into a data set. We've also purchased 10 climate stations that we've placed strategically around the island to fill gaps in the climate network as we see it. But right now we have about 50 locations, 50 across the island, that are collecting climate data that we're putting into a data set. So that compares to 9 official stations from Environment Canada. So we seem to be putting that data set together. So that helps us in understanding how the climate has changed in the past. To understand how the climate's changed into the future, we're the only place in the world, and I'll say that again, the only place in the world that has the output from all 40 global climate models that were used in the most recent assessment of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Most data sets out there that you can find online have about 18 models, but we have all 40 models, and we have it in a very easily accessible, mappable form for researchers. And this is a global data set, so even if you're doing research in Indonesia or in Australia or in Chile or in Russia, we can examine what the leading science tells us about how the temperatures, precipitation are going to change into the future going over the next 100 years. So those are two things, the understanding the past and the future climate. But of course, that's not of any value unless we can actually look at what the impacts are on climate here on Prince Edward Island. So I have a stable of graduate students who are looking at issues such as agriculture. We're working with the PEI Agricultural Insurance Agency to look at what characterizes a good yield for potatoes and a bad yield based on climate parameters. I have a graduate student who's looking at irrigation requirements for golf courses and how those might change under future climate. I have a graduate student who just finished looking at what the economic potential for agricultural crops would be under a future climate change. I have some students working internationally looking at climate change and the impact on the production of chocolate, so looking at cocoa plants, and we're trying to grow the first continental U.S. indigenous cocoa production down in the Florida Keys. That's what he's doing as part of his master's work. We're also looking at wind energy. Wind energy is a really great resource here on Prince Edward Island. It represents almost 30% of our total energy usage here in PEI. So the government's done a great job at putting in wind turbines and helping that, putting in a sustainable energy resource. I have an undergraduate student who's been working with the Wind Energy Institute up here in North Cape, Prince Edward Island, and has been looking at wind as a resource. How has it changed in the past? And what does our best science tell us change into the future will be with respect to wind? So these are some of the things. We've been looking at impacts and adaptation studies as well.
You also have, a video game climate model called CLIVE. What is CLIVE?
CLIVE stands for Coastal Impacts Visualization Environment. And you're right, it's a visualization, it's a simulation of what the island would look like under future sea level rise and under current future rates of coastal erosion. So we had conducted a study looking at rates of coastal erosion on Prince Edward Island. And overall, from the years 1968 to 2010, we came up with an average rate of 28 centimeters per year on average around the island. Now, it sounds like a lot or a little. Really, what we're interested in is what was vulnerable. Because the rate of change of our coast was looked at for every meter around the island, we multiplied that by 30, 60, and 90 years to see, under current rates of erosion, what type of infrastructure, roads, bridges, houses, how would these be vulnerable to coastal erosion moving into the future? And our study concluded there were over 1,000 homes that were at risk from coastal erosion, 17 lighthouses, 6 golf courses, 6 wastewater treatment facilities. So there's quite a significant amount of infrastructure that's at risk to coastal erosion. We mapped all that out, and then we realized that these studies were great, but we wanted to get the message out. What was the best way to do it? So one of my students, Alex Chen, came to me and suggested that we could create this video game so that using an Xbox game controller, so it's essentially a couple of joysticks and triggers, we could fly over the island and raise and lower the sea levels at will. And this has turned out to be a very effective tool at teaching communities or showing them the immediate risks to environmental changes that might take decades to occur. And it gives some immediate assessment of the risks that people might face under some current conditions like storm surges or other emergency weather events. So we took Clive to 8 communities across Prince Edward Island, and it's funny, one of the common things is we interviewed people before and after they saw Clive, is one is their concern went from high to very high. So even though they might find out that their own cottage is not threatened by what Clive tells them, I think there's this collective consciousness here in PEI to be concerned about their community, so that even though their concern was high, it still managed to get even higher when we showed them this video game, which immersed them into a technology that raised anxiety. There were grown men crying in some of the presentations I made simply because of their reaction, this emotional reaction that people have to video games. They're so real. The other interesting thing is, well, it did raise the willingness to adapt as well. People were saying, hey, we must do something about this issue. But I was criticized for downplaying the threat. Every community was telling me that the coastal erosion they were seeing was much higher than what our tool, this Clive tool, was showing. So overall, I think what it's done is raise awareness, because we've been awarded for Clive the PEI Planners Institute Award for community building. We've also received awards from MIT for the technology that we're using for communicating coastal issues. And the media outlet Al Jazeera has come to our lab to film us. So we have this international interest in our technology as well. And we've now are exporting this technology to the city of Los Angeles, to a town in Ontario known as Collingwood, as well as Colchester County in Nova Scotia. But we also have a few Caribbean islands who are looking for us to bring Clive to their communities as well.
So you would then have to import into these individual programs the data for those local areas.
Correct. Clive was built off of a high-resolution digital elevation model. All that means is that it's very accurate topography, or the heights and lows of land. And we get that information or that data from flying a laser off the side of a plane. It's very expensive, and the province flew this, it's called LIDAR, this laser data back in the year 2008. They also flew over the island with airplanes to get these high resolution photographs. And so we put those two together and it creates Clive. Now for smaller areas, getting a hold of that data is very difficult, especially some of these Caribbean islands that we talked about. So what we've done is we've just ordered a model airplane that has sensors that can get this high-level imagery that we require so that we can build Clive for any area now. It's not as fast as the LIDAR, which flies off of a plane, but one of these model airplanes is able to capture 2 square kilometers of land for every 40 minutes that we fly it. So it's very effective for smaller areas or smaller islands.
So it's one thing to know that climate change will have this impact and there will be coastal soil erosion, but is there anything you can do about it?
Yeah, there's lots of things you can do. I guess the first thing you can do about it is nothing and just let the sea sort of take the infrastructure and wash it away. And National Parks Canada has taken that view, for good reason, too. So they're moving their infrastructure, or removing the infrastructure before the sea takes it and pollutes the ocean. But they're buying land inland from the park boundary just to make up for land that they're losing every year, because a lot of places, you know, like I said, you can lose between 1 and 3 meters per year. So you could do nothing. You can retreat, which is sounds like you're going with your tail between your legs, but that essentially means you can pick up your home or your cottage or whatever infrastructure, your road, and move it further inland, which makes good sense. What a lot of homeowners are choosing to do is armor, and that's protecting their shoreline by putting up some rocks or a seawall. Now, the province recommends against doing this for good reasons. One is that it's very expensive. Like I said, PEI is made up of sand and sandstone, so there's no natural hard rock here. So if you need rocks to protect your shoreline, you have to bring them from off-island, which is very expensive. Second, it's expensive to engineer it properly, because if you just put some rocks out, those rocks usually get washed out in a big storm. The water gets behind the rocks and it moves it away. A second reason for not doing it is that if you protect your shoreline but your neighbors don't, you're only increasing their problem, because the energy from the waves does not dissipate against the rocks. It just gets deflected. And so we have many examples of where the coastal erosion increases for your neighboring properties if you put up a seawall or some coastal protection. The third reason is it doesn't work. I mean, it will work in the short term, but over time you're going to have to replace whatever you put in, because the seas are rising. You kind of lose the battle against nature if you try to protect yourself. So we're looking at other alternatives. The big issue for why PEI has had this increase in coastal erosion is we've lost most of the protective sea ice. During the winter, the province would be surrounded with ice, which would absorb the energy from the winter storms that cause the damage that we see for coastal erosion. Now, this past winter, we did have the ice. The past two winters, it's been quite severe here. But there was a 12-year period or so where there was no sea ice, and that's where we saw the increase in coastal erosion.
Thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you.